Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter, sitting in for Christopher Cruz in Washington. In today's show, we report on events in Venezuela. Protests there against the government of President Nicolas Maduro have turned deadly. Also, U.S. and Mexican officials have arrested the illegal drug trafficker who led the International Sinaloa Drug Organization. We hear about that later in the show. Unrest in Venezuela and the capture of a Mexican drug trafficker are next on As It Is. For weeks, anti-government demonstrations have been taking place in Venezuela. Protesters blame the government of President Nicolas Maduro for economic and social problems. Steve Ember has more on the story in this report from VOA's Brian Padden.
Nicolas Maduro narrowly won the Venezuelan presidential election last year. Mr. Maduro was the chosen successor of former President Hugo Chavez. Now, Venezuelans are angry about food shortages, high inflation, and violent crime. The economy is in trouble. Yet, Venezuela is a major oil producer and exporter. Venezuelans are divided over who is to blame for the economic problems and how to solve them. The student-led demonstrations began last month. The protests led to clashes with police. At least 14 people died, and more than 150 others were injured in the first 3 weeks of unrest. The head of the Roman Catholic Church has called for an end to the violence. Pope Francis is the first Catholic leader to come from South America. He has urged Venezuelan political leaders to work to support forgiveness and discussions. However, diplomatic tensions with the United States increased last week. Venezuela accused 3 U.S. diplomats of working with student protesters and expelled all 3. The U.S. answered the expulsions by ordering 3 Venezuelan diplomats to leave. Ties between the nations remain tense. Neither keeps an ambassador in the other's country, but their embassies remain open. Last week, President Maduro promised to name a new ambassador to the United States soon, but that is not likely to affect the concerns of many Venezuelans. They are angry about high inflation. The official inflation rate reached 56% in January. The country faces shortages of some basic goods. And crime is a problem. Eric Olson is a Latin American expert with the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. He says Venezuelans are divided over who is to blame.
People who are protesting are trying to hold the government accountable for this, pointing the finger at mismanagement or policy problems at on the part of the government. The government itself is blaming, agitators. It's blamed the United States.
Eric Olson says President Maduro's move to expel U.S. diplomats increases his popularity among supporters. However, the president says he also wants to improve communications with the United States. He said, "I call for the dialogue now. I accept this challenge. Let's initiate a high-level dialogue and let's put the truth out on the table." The U.S. has denied involvement in the protests. Jay Carney is a spokesman for President Barack Obama.
When President Maduro calls for a dialogue with the U.S. president and an exchange of ambassadors, he should focus instead on a dialogue with the Venezuelan people, because that is what is at issue here. This is not about the United States.
Venezuela is rich in oil and has some of the largest oil supplies in the world. However, oil makes up almost all of the country's exports, and the government has struggled to pay for the social welfare programs set up by former President Chavez. Eric Olson says Venezuela has to make reforms that satisfy both government supporters and the opposition.
The question is, can you continue those kinds of programs but have a better and more reformed economic policy that doesn't create such a crisis? And I think that's the challenge for both the government and for the opposition to some extent.
That could mean keeping some popular programs but changing government policies. I'm Steve Ember.
The leader of one of the world's largest illegal drug trafficking operations, Joaquin Guzman, will be tried in Mexico. Drug trafficking is the crime of buying and selling illegal drugs. Jonathan Evans has more on the story.
Mexican and U.S. law officers arrested Joaquin Guzman on February 22nd in Mazatlan, Mexico. He was the leader of the Sinaloa Cartel, a drug trafficking organization. The cartel's activities extend across North America, Europe, and Australia. Law officers say they had followed Guzman for weeks before his arrest. Mexico's Attorney General says Mr. Guzman escaped capture through a tunnel in one of his homes. Mexican officials will also charge Guzman for escaping from prison in 2001. In addition, they want to question Guzman about his drug organization. They want to break up the Sinaloa cartel. However, the United States also wants to charge Guzman for drug trafficking. The U.S. had offered a $5 million reward for his arrest. Eric Holder is the U.S. Attorney General. Mr. Holder is the top lawyer in the United States. He called Mr. Guzman's arrest a major accomplishment for both the U.S. and Mexico. Forbes magazine lists Guzman as one of the world's most powerful people. The magazine says he is worth more than $1 billion. However, the U.S. city of Chicago has declared Guzman public enemy number one. That name is only given to the city's worst criminals. Guzman is the first criminal to be named public enemy number one since the famous crime leader Al Capone in the 1920s. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And that is our program for today. Keep listening for the latest news at the top of the hour, Universal Time. I'm Mario Ritter.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. African militaries want drones to help them guard their borders and large open spaces. But makers of these drones, which are also called unmanned aerial vehicles or UAVs, say they could do much more than military work. They could deliver medicine, protect endangered species, and move goods quickly and cheaply. But some experts warn that letting drones operate, even for good uses, could create problems. Kenyan engineer James Munyoki has built several drones. One of them can carry a load of up to 6 kilograms. He is trying to increase that to 10 kilograms.
When I started building them, I was thinking the payload would be something like a camera for surveillance purpose. We need that in Kenya. That's going to enhance security. Apart from that, it can also monitor traffic. These are drones that can be used maybe for things like journalism, for photography. So the application is not just going to be for military purpose or security purpose.
Park rangers in South Africa are flying small drones to watch over endangered rhinos. Some experts say drones could also be used to document the flow of refugees trying to escape conflict in their countries, or to record government abuses of human rights. They could help in search and rescue operations and transport aid to hard-to-reach or dangerous areas. Africa's strong economic growth and bad road conditions are seen as a great business opportunity for drone makers. They believe battery-powered drones could move from one charging center to another, carrying items to villages far from cities. Kristin Sandvik is the director of the Norwegian Center for Humanitarian Studies. She says drones may solve some problems but create others.
Across Africa, very few countries have comprehensive domestic legislation on privacy and data protection and information storage. A drone can not only see or listen, it can also sense and hear and read. So in a couple of years' time, when you have the smaller drones also outfitted with facial recognition technology, you have smaller drones that could potentially hack into wireless systems.
Ms. Sandvik says drones carrying cameras may be used to deliver aid to a refugee camp. But she asks what happens to the information it may gather.
Is the drone going to give, you know, all this humanitarian crisis mapping information? Is that going to be handed over to the International Criminal Court, for example?
Drones are not yet ready for widespread use. The sensor technology needed to prevent drones from crashing into things needs to be improved. They are also costly, and in most countries, drones or other aircraft cannot be flown without special laws governing their use. Opponents and supporters of drones do not agree on much, but they do agree that the technology is coming, likely within the next 10 years, and they say Africa needs to be ready. And that is the Technology Report from VOA Learning English.
VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. This week on our program, we explore American folk music, the music of the people. Our musical guide is Barbara Klein. Come along with us and sing along anytime you'd like.
Good Night, Irene is an example of a traditional folk song. That means the song is so old, no one really knows who wrote it. Hughie Ledbetter, the singer and guitarist known as Leadbelly, first recorded Good Night, Irene in 1932. Since then, more than 100 other versions have been recorded. Good Night, Irene was a huge hit for the Weavers in 1950.
Sometimes I live in the country. Sometimes I live in town. Sometimes I take a great notion to jump into the river and drown.
Folk music researcher Bob Carlin notes the historic importance of protest songs. They help give voice to cultural and social movements, he says. One of the members of the Weavers was Pete Seeger. He was among those who popularized folk music in the 1940s. Later, he wrote some of the best-known songs of the civil rights and anti-Vietnam War protests of the 60s. Pete Seeger could be called the king of the protest song, in the words of folk musician Tony Trischka. Yet his greatest influence may have come from popularizing a song that he himself did not write. "We Shall Overcome" came from a Negro spiritual. As Tony Trischka points out, the original version was called "We Will Overcome." Pete Seeger thought "shall" sounded better. And he made other changes, like adding the verse "We are not afraid" to offer support for the protests taking place across the country.
We are not afraid.
Overcome became the theme song of the American Civil Rights Movement. Folk songs sometimes tell stories about real events. An example is the story of a young man whose last name was spelled D-U-L-A, but pronounced Dooley. Tom Dooley was a Civil War veteran in North Carolina. He was tried and found guilty of murder of his girlfriend, Laura Foster. He was hanged in 1868, yet the case left many questions. The story was retold in poems and songs, including the hit song Tom Dooley, recorded in 1958 by the Kingston Trio.
I met her on the mountain. there I took her life, met her on the mountain, stabbed her with my knife. Hang down your head, Tom, Julie, hang down your head and cry. Hang down your head, Tom, Dooley, poor boy, you're bound to die. This time tomorrow, reckon where I'll be. Hadn't it been for Grayson, I'd have been in Tennessee.
Oh, well now, boy,
hang down your head, Dooley, hang down your head and cry.
Folk singer and songwriter Amy Spiess says the history of American folk music can be imagined as a tree with many branches. At the center, she says, is Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie wrote almost 3,000 songs, but he only recorded about 300 of them. His granddaughter Anna Canoni says that was partly because he did not have enough money to record more. He made only one record with a major record company. Yet for all his influence, millions of Americans today remember him for just one song, which children learn in school.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
The song, This Land Is Your Land, seems like the perfect expression of pride in country. What many people do not know is that it was meant sarcastically as just the opposite. Woody Guthrie wrote it in 1940 in reaction to Irving Berlin's popular song, God Bless America. In fact, Woody Guthrie first called his song God Blessed America for Me. It was meant as a protest song against private property and the unequal treatment of citizens. This meaning is made clear later in the song, in the parts that most children never learn in school.
There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property. But on the backside, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me.
Another verse talks about seeing hungry people standing in line for public aid at the relief office. Woody Guthrie was a voice for labor unions and striking workers and families beaten down by the Great Depression in the 1930s.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me.
In the 1960s, folk singers like Joan Baez and Bob Dylan protested the Vietnam War. Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind became a big hit for the folk group Peter, Paul, and Mary in 1963.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before
Singer and songwriter Amy Spies says there are still protest songs being written. She points to the examples of Steve Earle and Neil Young, as well as what she calls more contemporary folkies. That would include herself, a child of the 80s. Amy Spies describes one of her songs as a protest song, but more of a story with the protest quietly built into it. The story is about a girl whose brother is a soldier who gets killed in a desert war. The song is called The Weight of the World.
I still see my brother Michael, pressed and polished, shaking hands down at the store. And everyone had come to see the All-Star hop the Greyhound bus to go to war. He punched me in the arm to say goodbye. It was the first time that I saw our father cry. And I kept all my brother's letters tied in ribbon in a box beneath my bed. And every night I read by flashlight with the covers in a tent above my head. His words said not to worry, doing fine. It was his way of trying to ease my mind while I was trying not to read between the lines. The weight of the world.
A new kind of folk music mixes elements of traditional folk and rock with mostly acoustic instruments. Some call it freak folk. Others hate that name. Whatever you call it, one artist often used as an example is the singer, songwriter, and harp player Joanna Newsom. This song is called Sprout and the Bean.
I slept all day.
People probably think of a folk singer as a fossil from the 1960s, a long-haired, guitar-playing idealist who sings about bringing the world together. But these days, with music production software, digital video, and social networks all easily available, folk artists really can bring the world together.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. Or the time,
our program was written by Nancy Steinbach and produced by Katie Weaver. Barbara Klein was our narrator, and I'm Steve Embert, inviting you to join us again next week for This is America from VOA Learning English.